Welcome, guys. We're back with the OpLab podcast. Really excited this week to have a good friend of mine, Brian Maddox, with us. And Brian, I met, a good many years ago, really training jiu-jitsu. He came to our gym to train jiu-jitsu, and that's how we met. And we've had many good training sessions together on the mat and then, you know, also in the gym, and have many conversations with Brian. I always enjoy, you know, talking to Brian, kind of the philosophy of life to some extent. And so, as you know, part of our goal here with the OpLab podcast is just really just to share stories. That to me, it's kind of like this is a situation almost like sitting around the campfire, sharing stories and what you can learn, from other people. And Brian, on his journey, I know he's always striving to improve and become his best. And he has, a pretty diverse background. I think, did you retire in 2015? Is that right, from the Army? Is that correct? In 2015, Brian?
Yeah, I did. That's correct.
So, yes, absolutely. A full colonel in the Army. Had a lot of adventures there. Was also a professor at the U.S. Army War College. And then, like I said, it's also where I met Brian was in jiu-jitsu. And is a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. He's done very well there. I got to see him compete a little bit. I guess that was a couple years ago at the Masters World.
17, I think.
Yeah. And did very well out there. So anyway, I don't want to keep on too much here. I just want to kind of give a brief introduction how Brian and I met. And then kind of let him, we talked about, just tell a little bit of his story, his background. He's from Greenville originally, which I didn't even realize until we kind of started putting this thing together. And a little bit how he got, you know, from Greenville into the Army all around the world, and kind of a little bit about what he's doing now. So I'll let you talk a little bit, tell you a little bit of your story there, Brian. And again, appreciate you being on, taking the time with us today.
No, it's my pleasure, Billy. I am a Greenville native. Both of my parents were Furman folks and were lifelong supporter of Furman, and I don't know what that means to you as a Clemson guy and all that. You know, when I was growing up, my dad liked to say, you know, that that between Clemson and Carolina, Furman was a rose between two thorns. I was born in Greenville and spent my earliest years there, and then my family moved over to Anderson. And my dad worked for, it used to be Anderson College, it's Anderson University now. I lived there, you know, for about half of my youth. And then my family moved up here to where I am now, which is in East Tennessee. My dad was worked at Carson Newman University, where he retired from after many years. So I say that I have feet in both places, and I claim both places at home as home. I'm back to Greenville. Of course, all my family, my immediate family, my children, all live in Greenville. And what a great place it is. My brother still lives. My oldest brother is a judge over in Anderson. We're not going to talk about him. And then my sister and I, because I had two older brothers, and then my sister, we're closer in age. It's funny because they both have strong connections to the Anderson area. Went to high school there at T.O. Hanna. And then my sister and I, we basically grew up here. So we have strong connections here in East Tennessee. But I'm back in Greenville. Every time I'm back in the area, I'm always back in Greenville. I've got many friends there. But I did my undergraduate schooling at Carson Newman. No surprise, my dad was there at free tuition, a nice incentive. and you mentioned the Army. It's funny how things happen. I was kind of a thoughtless history major in college. You know, I loved what I was doing, but I really didn't know where, because my dad asked me one time, he's like, what do you do? You're going to go to grad school. And I hadn't even thought about it. And the next day, I got a phone call from the professor of military science who, you know, I thought maybe had cold called me, but I found out later my dad had made a call to him and said, hey, you need to call my son. I'd always been interested in the military. I'd done some junior ROTC in high school, and I really liked it, but I didn't know what to do. But I went to that appointment, and I thought, And so I was convinced to sign up, and I thought I would do 3 years in the reserves. And then I came out at 27 years, 10 months on the other end, after, and just, you know, and had a life-changing experience. You know, like I've told many people, I don't have any idea what kind of person I would be if it wasn't for what I experienced in the Army. I mean, it's such a crucible of leadership and just meeting a diverse group of people, and it taught me, and I talked to Adam Honeycutt about this back in June, you know, it taught me a code. And I realized that I was, that you know, what I was taught is you live by a code, which is a little old fashioned these days. But it got me interested in that and kind of set me on the path, you know, kind of like what your topic is. You know, the Army is all about kind of optimizing you as a leader, as a person. And that's what I liked about the culture. And I found out later in life, you know, and I've worked at other places now since I retired, some places don't do that. Like, you're an asset or you're an employee, but the Army was always about making you better and pushing you. And I was very lucky that I had good leaders who were mentors to me. And I remember that I learned that word. Yeah, I actually had a formal class back in the early 90s when the first time I'd ever heard that term mentor, and so and what that meant to me. And then I have people now that I look back on and say, well, that person was an incredibly influential person. I mean, I consider you a mentor in a lot of things in jujitsu and like in the physical world, and even more than that, you know, we've had some life wisdom conversations. You know, I value and seek out those relationships, and I think that's incredibly important. You know, if you're trying to be the best or whatever you're trying to be, is find those people, you know, that you trust and that you like and that you relate to, and there's always a connection. You know, what I've learned is that mentor meant that there was a connection. It wasn't just somebody that was smart in that field, you know, technically good. It was somebody that there was a personal connection there. You know, there's a friendship or whatever you'd like to call it, even if it's superior to subordinate, which it was a lot in the military, and I valued those, and just, you know, again, made huge benefits for me to have those kind of relationships.
So tell me, you don't have to go too much onto it, but just looking through some stuff you sent me, so where, you know, through the Army and your years there, how when I looked at your bio, like, you've been all over the place. So right. Tell me a little bit about that adventure. I mean, obviously, that's not something that everybody, you know, I was not in the military, but, you know, used to see some of the advertisements on TV, like, you know, going all this adventure. But really, when I looked at you've been all over the world as a result of that. So tell me a little bit about what that was like and being experiencing different cultures and things like that.
Well, at the beginning, and I guess the lesson from that I took away from that was kind of a value, and that's something your listeners, I hope, would value, is, you know, for me, I was a homebody. Like, I had families, you know, in South Carolina and Tennessee, and, you know, I really liked the area, and I liked being with my family. I come from a big family on both sides. You know, both of my parents have big families, and we were close. I always tell people we had big Southern families, you know, that I think a lot of people can relate to. And when I got into the Army, it pulled me away from that, and I fought it pretty hard for a couple of years because it was very difficult kind of emotionally to be pulled away. But the thing about the military, and I know a lot of other jobs, like, you know, it forces you to engage and get out of your comfort zone, and which is, I know, something you know about, you know, as you work with people, you know, so having to go out, and, you know, in the Army, is it's constantly about that, like that. I think the longest period that I spent anywhere in the military was 5 years, and that was toward the end of my career, actually, when I was in Greenville, when I was working over at Furman. Every place else was 2 or 3 years max, and so it's always new people, it's a new job, you know, it's always moving upward with new responsibilities, and so over time, you just get used to it, you know, and this became part of the code, you know, that I call it, you know, that you know that every couple of years, you're going to have new set of coworkers, new set of friends, a new house, new town, new place, and you get into a routine of, okay, I'm going to have 3 weeks of feeling a little homesick, and then that'll go away, and then it'll be great, and then you hit your stride, and then you'll power down, and then you'll be ready to move somewhere else. You just get used to it. But it got me into the that was kind of the way life is, you know, that, and it's interesting to me because my kids, as tag-alongs with me, I found out that later in life, like, they're all very gregarious. I'm kind of shy naturally. They're all gregarious because they moved every 2-3 years. They had friends, and you know, it was time to go. They would wave and say, see you later, see you down the road, and they would go, and they didn't shed a tear, you know, and they're all, you know, so they, it shaped their, and I've actually been very happy about that because I think that's helped them to be very well-developed and well-rounded people, you know, that they get along with people, they're not afraid of strangers, you know, they'll go to new places, try new things. So that was kind of my experience, just in a broad sense. And then I went all over the place, and I think I sent you the short list, Billy. I had no high spots. I started my first tour down in Georgia, and I was there about 10 months, and then I went to Korea, and so I was about 22 and on the other side of the world, and that was a life-changing event. I came back, and I bounced all over the States. I did Germany, which was fabulous. You know, I got to teach up at West Point. I mean, that's the other thing about the military is the opportunities that it presents you if you want to do something, if you want to travel, if you want to learn something, the opportunities are just almost endless. The Army paid for me to get my master's degree at Vanderbilt, which is something I never would have been able to do. And it was, you know, and then teach at West Point. I taught history there for 3 years. You know, so they're just endless opportunities. And the joke, kind of what I would say, and is, you know, the Army is great if it doesn't kill you. So, you know, and then, you know, just also on the physical side, you know, it introduced me, and that's where I, you know, I don't need much excuse, Billy. You probably like to talk about jiu-jitsu. Because it's been such an important part of my life, and it's really weird to hear me say that, but because you always think, well, you know, I met this person, or I moved in this, or I had this job, and to me, it's like, well, you know, and I tell people, I'm like one of the disciples in the Bible. When I have a conversation with somebody, and they express any interest in jiu-jitsu, I'm like, let me tell you what it's done for me. Because it literally, and that's no joke, it changed my life. It changed the way I looked at life. And all those things I just told you about in the Army, like, I didn't get some of the things. There were some things missing, and jiu-jitsu filled those voids. But the Army did introduce me. It provided the opportunity for me to do that. And actually, the story about that, which I think is kind of funny. So I was and I think I mentioned in the stuff I sent you, I was a battalion commander. So I had about 500 or 600 soldiers that worked for me. I was a lieutenant colonel, and this was back in 2008, actually, no, 2006, I think, and 2007. And the Army, what they had done is they'd gotten with the folks down at Alliance in Atlanta. There were some Rangers down at Fort Benning,
yeah,
who were dissatisfied with the Army's hand-to-hand combat, which had not changed since World War II. It was the same thing. It had never, ever been updated. And so they got with, you know, the folks down at Alliance, and there was a handful of them. And I think you may know some, you probably know some of those guys. Matter of fact, if you remember, I know when we went down for your promotion to black belt, there was a general who got his black belt who had been involved. And there was a couple of guys, and you probably met those guys.
Yeah.
Of course, they're famous now kind of in the jiu-jitsu world as doing this. So what they did is they created a new Army combatives program, which is basically Brazilian jiu-jitsu is the short answer. There's some judo, there's a few other things. But so they created this program that soldiers could go through, and it had three levels. There was a phase one all the way through phase four, and as you progressed. So a lot of people in the Army were doing phase one, which was a 40-hour course.
Mm-hmm.
And so the unit I was in, they had a really good program. You know, they bought an octagon, which was kind of funny. You know, they put it in the gym, and they had a tournament. You know, and I had always wanted to do this. I was one of those guys that I wanted to do something in martial arts. And actually, I remember when I was living in Anderson when I was about 5 or 6, back in the 1970s, we had a guy at Anderson University that he was a black belt in karate, and he brought this guy over from Japan, and it was like, I think this was kind of like, if I remember correctly, right after Bruce Lee got really popular, and so this guy from Japan, he had long hair, and he would break the bricks and like do all kinds of stuff, and we went to this gym, like a presentation, and it was fantastic, and I think from that point, all of my life, I'm like, I wanted to do something, but didn't know how to get involved with it. You know, like when I was in high school, there were no real gyms. I did a little bit in college. There was a guy I met who was a wrestler who had trained a little kung fu. And so we would go down in the wrestling gym, and he showed me some stuff. And my brother had showed me taught me how to box. So when this, back to the Army, when they started this phase one program, I went to the instructor and I said, hey, look, can you set me up a senior leaders course? I want my senior guys, senior NCOs and officers to go through this program to see what it is so they can understand it and sell it. But my secret motive was I want to do it. And so we all went, and I tell you, I you know, you're talking about a kick in the pants. During that, we would roll, and we would do 2-minute rolls. We'd do 3 2-minute rolls, and it's the first time I'd ever rolled. And I literally, Billy, would go home and sit in a top tub of Epsom salts every day for that week because I was like, oh, my God, I can't move.
Yeah, yeah.
But the end of that story is at the end of that 40 hours, everybody went, well, that was great. I'm never doing that. And I went to level 2. I went to the next level class. They all were like, what are you doing? And so I signed up to the level 2, went through that, which was 80 hours, and then begged my boss, who was a full colonel, to let me go to Fort Benning for the 3-week course, which he absolutely was not going to let me do, and laughed at me. As a matter of fact, he stopped answering my phone calls. Usually I get the message. You know, I was a pretty good soldier. I just was not getting the message, and he just refused to answer the phone and wouldn't answer my emails. I'm like, I've got this set up. I've got a plan. Let me go to Fort Benning and do jiu-jitsu for 3 weeks, and he wouldn't do it. So shortly after that, I moved to Greenville, and that's when I came over and found you guys and Hoffa. And matter of fact, the first time I walked into y'all's gym, I love this story too. I looked you guys up, and that was the time, Billy, you know, the jiu-jitsu guys were over on the West End and yep. where that dance studio is. And yep. then you had a CrossFit gym on the other end of town. And I showed up at the CrossFit gym, and I met for the first time Russell Hugh and Derek. I can't remember his last
yeah,
name.
I met, yeah.
And here are these two ginormous dudes, kind of, you know, rough around the edges. I'm like, what am I getting into? And they were the nicest people. I'm like, oh, no, you go over here. And so I walked in to the studio, and I met Hoffa, and then I didn't even have a gi. Because in the Army, we would train in our yep. utilities. You know?
Yep.
And,
yep.
So I walked in with my utilities, and he's like, no, no, no. And I've been doing it ever since. And you know, you left out, you know, that I sent you that bio, and my wife was laughing at me. I put on there, I'm a proud brown belt.
Yes.
Proud, like you should. You know.
You
I'm
should
like, yeah,
be.
No. I earned that.
You earned
like,
it.
I'm proud, and I am. I'm
yeah.
like, I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
But you know, and I don't know where I go from there, Billy. Like, you know, just the physical aspect, the discipline, you know, and then like, you know, somebody said to me, you know, that jiu-jitsu is like playing chess with your body. Mm-hmm. And like the mental aspects and you know, just sitting on the side of the mat talking to Hoffa, you know, and you know, he's kind of, you know, Hoffa has that kind of be like water aspect to him, you know. I sat next to him one time. We were over, this is when y'all were, we were over at the, that Pleasantburg Road over there on the upper floor.
Yep.
And I was sitting there and I had rotated out of the rolling, you know, and we were talking about some position, and Hoffa looked at me, and he said, you know, jiu-jitsu is not that hard. He said, you either need to be as strong as a mountain or flow like water. And then he kind of had that moment, and he said, the hard part is knowing which one you're going to do. And I looked at him, I said, wow, Hoffa, that's pretty deep. I don't think I have enough oxygen to process that right now. But it's, you know, it's been great for me, and, you know, and it's, and you know, now as an older grappler, you know, and I've had to adjust, and like it's forced me into that process that I think none of us really like, but it just is part of it of you know, how you manage. And I talk a lot about to other folks, like how you have to manage your training and your recovery and things like that, just to stay in the game.
Yeah.
And you in your game, you know, the style, you know, I was always a very athletic, kind of naturally athletic. Both my parents were good athletes, and so I felt I was one of those people that I felt like I had some, you know, some what do they call it, like physical intelligence, I think, because, you know, like I felt like, you know, I could, I was always coordinated and, you know, was decent in sports and could kind of run out on the field, you know, on that first time and do okay and not just flop, you know. But the problem with that for me with my jiu-jitsu game, and you know this, you know, we've rolled many times, and I can't tell you, and I always use this, you know, I now I'm at that point, you know, where I try, you know, a big part of my game is coaching people who are younger than I am, which is almost everybody these days, and below me in belt wise and skill wise. And I always tell them, like, and you laugh about this, like I said, look, you know, for 2 years, and like these are people, and I have trained all over the world, like I trained for 3 years in Israel, and there are people over in Israel who know who Billy Fletcher is, because I'm like, listen, Billy Fletcher would like be on top of me, and I would be like trying to frame, and I'm holding my hands up, you know, like you're on the bottom of side control, and I would try to bench press Billy Fletcher when he had, you know, his, you know, he had the cross face, and I'm like, after a while you just learn. I said, it took me 2 years, sometimes I'm not the sharpest knife, you know, and I usually end up getting an arm triangle. Do you remember that, Billy? I would be like, ah, just give up, and then I'm done. And like, I don't know, I can't tell you how many times you submitted me. And I would just tell folks, like, no matter how good an athlete you are, you cannot do that. You cannot bench press anybody for, you know, more than a minute. It doesn't matter. And I would teach classes, you know, and, you know, guys, you know, 25-year-old guy would try to bench press. You know, you've been there. It's like, dude, you're super strong. I'm not knocking you. You just can't bench press me for 2 minutes. I'm just going to lay on you. Me and gravity are going to hang out with you. You know, and... But that whole process is, you know, I think I would not have been able to do that unless I had to figure out, like, you know, you're not 25, you're not as flexible as you used to be, you know, you can't go toe to toe with these guys. And that was a tough lesson for me, because that's my nature, is to be able to do that. It's like, hey, I can match you, you know, for a short period of time, but now it's like, no, you've got to use, you know. So that's forced me to develop my skills more, which I think probably in my jiu-jitsu game, I was getting over a lot just by athleticism. Yep. You know, I could get over on a purple belt or a blue belt if we were close to the same size and skill level by athleticism. And it's forced me now to really look at my technique and really hone it in, which I think, you know, has made me better. Like, I feel like I'm a better, you know, grappler now.
Yep.
Than I, you know, even though I think I'm probably not as strong as I was 10 years ago when I started with you guys at Alliance.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit, too, even since you've been gone. You know, I think we've kind of had some correspondence, which I love about, you know, jiu-jitsu in the gym is like, you know, even though, gosh, I think you've been gone from Greenville, what, almost 5 years maybe, or maybe?
Yeah.
So, you know, still being able to have conversations and stuff. And so that's one of the things, because we're around the same age and, you know, and it's kind of one. It's really the same thing you're saying. Kind of one of the realizations I've made is that, you know, just, and you use the word stay in the game. I think that's huge. Is, you know, one way to stay in the game is you have to be. We would like. We were just talking about this before we got on. Is, you know, is we have all this knowledge as we get older. We would like to share it with the younger people so they don't make some of the same mistakes. But it's almost like you have to train smarter. I think. You can get away with more when you're younger, but it's not you can't train, not because you can't be at a good level, but you have to be much smarter about your training. And I know you know, coming from, you know, probably, you know, just your, you know, like talking about your story, like your parents were athletes, then in the military, you know, you mentioned that, and Hoff and I just had a little bit of a conversation about it today, a little bit different, but, you know, is the tendency is you're probably, me and you are probably more like the mountain. Than the water. Oh, it used to be, right? And so, so fighting that mentality, not really fighting mentality, but realizing that and realizing that being like the water does not necessarily mean weaker. You know, it just means it allows you to stay in the game. And that's not just with jiu-jitsu, but like even, you know, we've talked about physical training, you know, and just going out and like just pounding the miles and, doing the high volume workouts and things like that, you know, that's even what we've done, you know, we were just talking a little bit, we've got some new tools here at the gym, and put your son through a workout just this week, right. And part of the you know, reasoning for that too is it's just a tool to allow us to do that, you know, be smarter about it. We can see the data, see the feedback, allow us to do things in a safe way. But you know, regardless of the tools you have, that I think that concept is critical. And you know, and if you could start training smart when you're 20, you probably wouldn't have as many injuries as me and you have kind of accumulated over the years. But sometimes you just have to learn kind of the hard way. But I think it's almost, like I said, it almost becomes a necessity at a certain age. You know, if you're going to still continue to train, you have to be smart about it. So, you want to shed some light a little bit? Because I know you've changed your training up over the last few years. Do you want to share a little bit about that and kind of what your experience has been with that as well?
Yeah, of course, again, it starts with you guys at Alliance. Along with jiu-jitsu, I did CrossFit. For about 5 years, I was pretty regular doing CrossFit because I just was one of those people that, and I've realized this now again, and you made this point at an older age, you know, I don't know, my wife reminds me that that I don't do a lot of self-reflection on myself. Like, I was one of those people that I have an engine, you know, that just, and I, as I thought about it too, you know, I noticed my parents did this, you know, they were not frenetic, you know, but they always had a purpose, and they were always doing, like, my mom, you know, she lived to be, you know, 86, and when she died, you know, the doctor said, you know, her heart is like a 35-year-old, like, she walked 4 or 5 miles every single day, you know, she just was dedicated, and it took me a little while to realize that I kind of had that engine. And you know, the cost of that, as you point out, is, you know, as you get older, like, you push too hard and you overtrain, and you have to learn some lessons. But I you know, I gravitated toward CrossFit and really enjoyed that. And, you know, I did some, you know, we would do heavy lifts. I know I've worked out with you guys, and we would do a lot of heavy weights. And then I realized that I had a moment. It was funny. I was in Afghanistan in 2010 and 11, and they had at a place I was very lucky. They had a really active CrossFit chapter there, and some pretty good training. You know, there were Marines, and they had been trained, and they'd been to the level one course. And then I had three or four guys that we would get together and roll outside, and we had a couple of mats, and so I was doing a little jiu-jitsu. And I just, because I've been in the Army forever, I run, even though I'm not really built ideally as a runner, but I just kind of got in the habit. So I started doing all three of those things because I was in Afghanistan, and I did that. I lasted about 5 months, and then I literally hit the wall. I mean, I was in bed, I got a virus or something, and I just thought, man, like, I just got whacked right between the eyes. And I made the decision there. You know, it was funny, you know, those kind of emotional events, you know, you'll sit down and do some self-reflection. And I thought, okay, something's got to ease up. Is it going to be CrossFit or jiu-jitsu? And I'm like, well, you know, I started doing the CrossFit to make my jiu-jitsu better. So I stopped being, you know, like the every, you know, 6 days a week CrossFit guy. I still do. I think CrossFit probably, you know, that kind of idea. And then Warrior, you know, that kind of Martin Rooney stuff that I know that you guys did. And then a lot of the things that you do now have kind of still shaped my workout. But, you know, so I do shorter workouts now just because I've done a little research, and I realize that if you're over 40, you don't need to do the marathon workouts. I do a lot of high intensity, higher intensity, I guess. I actually read your email. I was really interested, and I know you sent out something about how you can easily change a high intensity workout into a high intensity weight workout. Because I always feel like, you know, and again, jiu-jitsu kind of shapes this. You know, when I do high volume kind of CrossFit stuff, I feel like I lose a little weight. And I feel like I move better, but I lose the strength. So when I was trying to be athletic with a bigger opponent, and then that would kind of shift me back into doing more, you know, and I, you know, super slow, which you introduced me, that's been phenomenal to me. Cause I do at my age feel the joints, you know, like I just feel, you know, I did all, you know, for 30 plus years really of running, you know, my knees, you know, just ache a little bit. My elbows and super slow helped that a lot. So I could do like some really good strength training and not feel it. But I kind of go back and forth, to be honest with you. You know, this is something that's a future conversation. You know, I've tried to balance it. Because there was a couple times, you know, a couple when I was training, you know, for competition, you know, you were mentioning back in 2016 and 17, I did Atlanta and I went out to Las Vegas and did the Masters. You know, I was about 172 and I felt like I'd not been able to move. And then my joints felt great because I'd lost about 10 pounds. And like, man, I felt like I was light on my feet. But then I also, you know, had a couple of guys. And then I realized, you know, when I was at the Masters that, you know, everybody who is still training is, you know, at my age or at our age is super fit. And it's like, a lot of them are super strong, you know.
Yeah.
And they don't move as well. And I there was a couple times, you know, I got some, you know, some wins on the, you know, I won some matches, you know, by movement, but there were some strong guys. And so I walked away from that thinking I need to balance, you know, try to rebalance, you know, where you can still move, but also have some strength, you know, to handle a guy who, you know, I always laugh. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I have to show you this. There's a video of me at the Masters, and it's in the camera. It's Hoffa, who's so I was training at the time up in D.C. This was actually kind of a this. I think this actually tells you a lot about how I can be a little old school about things. So I was training. I was living at the time up in D.C., and so I trained at a great gym up there with a guy named Nakapon Fujipon, who Hoffa has actually competed against. Super nice guy. He's got a really great gym in D.C. Called Beta Academy. And so I trained with him for a couple of years. And so I go out to the Masters, and lo and behold, you know, I'm in the position, or I think I'm in this position. I'm like, okay, who do I ask to coach? Like, Hoffa's, again, is one of my mentors. Like, Hoffa has a special place in my life, but I didn't want to offend my current professor. So I actually went to both of them. First of all, I talked to another mentor. I talked to Adam Huntington. Hey, what should I do here? Because he was there, and he's like, oh, you should talk to him. So I went over and talked to both. So anyway, they end up sitting together, which probably was not a good idea because they're filming and doing commentary on my match. And they keep talking about it. And so I was competing with this guy that I had met up in D.C. He's a great guy. And I can't remember his name, but he's Russian. And, you know, Russians are always a little scary on the mat. I don't know if you ever competed. These guys are kind of crazy. And so... So, but both of us, and he actually was a little bit older than me, but neither one of us had zero flexibility. So both Hoffa and Nakapon are talking about how we look like two old rams that are going to, because we're in the tie-up.
Yep.
And nobody, and we're both of us are pretty strong, but none of us are flexible. And so we're just like two rams going back and forth, and they're laughing at us. And I'm like, you know, so when I saw that, I'm like, okay, I need to work on some flexibility. So I can do a little bit better than that. These guys won't laugh at me. You know? I still struggle a little bit, with managing. I'm one of those people that just, I just won't take, I have to remind myself and make myself take a day off, and I need to take an off week. I'm one of those people. I feel like I have been lazy and have not met the standard for, you know, optimization if I miss a workout day. And I think that's, you know, that's just something I still struggle with, even today I've changed my workout a little bit. I started, you know, went back to a little bit. I was doing some Fran workout, and I just, you know, I had not done it in a while, and I was a little sore in the shoulders, and my thighs were a little bit sore, and I'm like, yeah, you should probably take a rest day and just walk or do a jog. And like I did a, you know, I did another one today. So I still struggle with that. And but I think I've gotten better, some of the technology, some of the things you've introduced me to, you know, I got to be a big fan of checking my variable heart rate. Like, that helped me. And like, that was kind of an objective sign. Like, if my heart rate, resting heart rate was up, that was a good sign. Like, hey, you can't fool yourself. Yeah, I would talk. I'm good at talking myself into work now.
Yeah.
And that would say, you know what? Like, that's, you know you're not going to feel good if that heart rate is already high. And so that's helped me a lot. But you have to do that. I think you have to manage it. You know, I had to manage my rolling. I got to where I would roll. I was rolling three times a week when I was living in Israel, and I would try. And this was my intent. Is, you know, earlier in the week I found I had more energy, and so I would roll hard on Monday or Tuesday, you know, depending on what training. And then I would try to go about 75% in midweek, and then by Friday or Saturday I would try to almost flow roll, just, you know, go with my opponent. And that helped a lot. But again, you know how this goes. Like, you're flow rolling, and all of a sudden you feel a little resistance, you know, from that purple belt, and you're resistant. Next thing you know, it's a full on competition match. You know, and you're like, nah, I shouldn't do that. But that's the goal, is to kind of manage that. And you know, so I've tried to get better with taking taking days off. I don't run as much as I used to. That was kind of a hard thing to do, because I felt like, I don't want to say I enjoyed that, but I think it does something for me. It's almost like a secondhand habit, like I just feel like something I need to do. But again, that would cause me to do a lot. I would roll and I would work out, and I tried to do shorter strength. If I'm rolling a lot, I'll do shorter strength workouts, just so that I'm not just getting so much volume that I'm just worn out. I don't have any energy. Gus, that was a long loop there. I hope that answered your question. But the bottom line is a struggle, and you have to kind of play it by ear and just keep, as you age or if you get injured, you just got to stay with it. I think is the key.
Yeah, I think it's, obviously there's a many personalities, having done this my whole life, you run into. So, you've got, and there's always is a balance. Like, you've got some people that, I used to say, even with our training, when I was doing only one-on-one training, this is even before jiu-jitsu, and that one of my challenges with a lot of times was to get people to, because we're doing high intensity, but that was what I believed in, and I kind of, I think, we got a lot of, that's what I love talking. We got a lot of similarities. Like, I get kind of tunnel vision, and that's how I'm going to do things. I think that's the best way to do it. But what's the struggle sometimes back then was getting people to really work at high intensity, some people. And then on the other side of it is when you added, so then you could kind of accommodate for that a little bit by, like, when we started doing CrossFit and we got classes, so you know, that's high intensity too, but you've got those workouts spread out throughout the whole week. So somebody could, theoretically come every day and not go as intense every day, kind of like what you're talking about training now. But on the other side of that, then you'd have the people that, like you, who tend to go really hard, they go hard every day. So, it's that balance of some people, struggling to even get in the gym, two or three days a week, or when they come to train hard, and then the other side is sometimes, so it's always, to me, it's always trying to help people find that balance, and for myself too, that's, I have the same challenges, some of it, I think, psychological, one of the things that this kind of way I try to, talk to people about that now is I really try to think about, of course, in jiu-jitsu can be exercise too, but it's more, I think of it more as a specific thing that you're doing. But just from an exercise standpoint, I really try to define it like something you're doing specific to create an adaptation. So, like, let's say strength. So I'm going to do this specific thing to try to get stronger. I'm going to do this specific thing to try to create, a conditioning effect, or this thing to create, more mobility. But I'm doing it just to try to elicit that adaptation. And then you also have exercise, or, I would even call it like movement, which is really, I use it more as a well-being tool. So I'm doing it more for, like, the, for lack of a better word, the endorphins and the different, but I don't necessarily have to get, a physical training effect from it. So, like, almost like what you're talking about with running, you could do, you could do that to train for something specific, but also you could use it for, hey, I just feel better when I run. You know, I don't have to kill myself. I go out for a couple miles or whatever. I feel better. You know, and it's not impeding my other goals. Then, you know, that's fine. Whereas it used to be when I did, really was my pure focus was the high intensity resistance training was, you know, you're only going to train for the specific adaptation and you need to let your body rest the rest of the time. You know, and some people, you know, they need that outlet each day, you know, so, but they don't necessarily have to go, like I said, don't have to necessarily go at super high intensity every day, but they can do something every day and mix those other days in with, you know, where you're trying to get a specific adaptation, so.
This is something that recently, as I realized, Billy, because it's exactly what you're talking about, because in Israel, I met a couple of guys who were really big into movement and mobility and yoga, and so they got me interested in it, and I was kind of impressed, and I had learned from watching these guys, because I was always frustrated, because, like, I would do these workouts, you know, and I feel like I've been working out, you know, since I was about 12, and never, you know, in the last 10 years, I probably can count on one hand the days that I've missed a workout, but I couldn't do, I couldn't do more than a couple handstand pushups, or I couldn't do an L-sit, and I'm like, so I was really intrigued by these guys. I'm like, how do you do that? And then I realized, well, there's technique there, yep. You know, like, yep. They don't just push up, you know, there's a technique. And there were certain things. So I started, you know, I would start practicing. So one day a week, you know, kind of usually like on a Saturday or Sunday is kind of a rest day, active rest day. I would do some of the movement drills that I'd learned at gym. And the funny story there, and I have kind of a history of this. We can talk about some other time, like just because I'm, you know, I was in the Army, and like, so there, I've met famous people and I didn't know who they were. And so at my gym in Israel, I trained with this guy named Aaron Burt, who was pretty well known there and like had worked in the Israeli military. And, you know, like I said, he was well known in their sport community. And so I was training a couple of times, and I had, you know, somebody, a partner next to me. There would, you know, be a couple of guys in there I didn't know, and they would like kind of come up and they go, hey, do you know who those guys are? And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, those are some of the best mobility movement coaches in the world. And I went, oh, great. And so one of them was a brown belt, or no, I'm sorry, a blue belt. And so I went over and introduced myself. You know, I was always like, hey, you know, I'm here, you know, I'm part of this gym, you know, and, you know, I'm an American. And so we would always say, super nice guy. Well, And I learned some great mobility techniques, some movement stuff that really helped, you know, with like my like spinal stiffness and like some really cool stretches. And so probably a year went by, and I'd seen this guy a couple times, and I was talking to a coworker, and who I did talk into taking up jiu-jitsu, and I was telling him this story. I said, you know, you should try some of these movement drills, like they're really really good. And I told him, I said, you know, this guy's supposedly famous. And so I turned around and back, and all of a sudden, so what my coworker did is he started Googling, like, you know, movement coaches in Israel. And 10 minutes later, so he said, he turned around and there was a picture on his computer screen. He said, is this the guy that you met? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's one of them. He goes, oh, that's Ido Parente. Like, that's Conor McGregor's movement coach. And I'm like, oh, really? I'm like, well, he's a nice guy. You know, I had a nice chat with him. I had no idea who he was.
Yeah.
But yeah, he, you know, what I've come back to is what I realized is, you know, I started doing these and doing, and I had a couple friends who did yoga that I did get those. And I guess it is endorphins. Like I could, if I did that, it was much easier because in my brain, I'm like, I've done something.
Yep.
I have done something. For the day, I haven't been lazy. I did something productive, and I felt better. Like I felt that weight off my shoulders, and that helped me a lot in that management process of, like, you know. And I've gotten much better saying, you know, I don't feel 100%. I think I'll walk. I'll do a 2-mile walk and do some yoga, and like after that, like I felt like that urge to, like, because before that, I would be hitting the pull-up bar or doing squats or doing push-ups, and like, you know, and you know as well as I do, you know, if you're if you're not feeling it, that's when you're going to get injured, yep. or you're going to get discouraged. Your performance, you know, is not going to be great. So that's been a great tool in the toolbox to learn, like, hey, you know, and you know, this is something too, Billy. I was going to say, you know, and it's why I value what your guys do, you and Hoffa and all your folks, is, you know, all that time in the Army. You know, the Army is always kind of pushed forward. But one thing I didn't get that I wish I had, and we were talking earlier, you know, if you could learn these things when you're in your 20s, is I think the way I categorize it to just be kind of, you know, general purpose fitness, you know, which is what the Army wanted. You know, like, I would push hard, you know, I did a lot of push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups and bought a lot of body weight. If I could get in the gym, I would do that. But I never had people talk to me about things like periodization and like how you manage fatigue. And, you know, I wish I'd had a good coach, you know, because I literally remember when I was in my 20s as a junior officer thinking, you know, okay, because the Army had three pillars of fitness. One was strength, one was endurance, and one was flexibility. And I'm like, okay, I run all the time. I got that covered. I'm doing push-ups, and I was in the weight room bench pressing and squatting, you know, in my 20s and 30s. I got that. And I'm like, I just have never been very flexible. So yeah. I just discounted that. And I'm lucky because I think I'm lucky because, you know, I didn't get all the way to my age. I got a good ways toward where I am now. But I finally dawned on, like, you know, you can improve yep. your flexibility just like you can your endurance and your strength. And I feel much better, and I don't have all the kind of stiffness and lack of flexibility, despite what that video I was talking about may show. But I've gotten better because I've worked on that. That's yep. that's been an area of improvement for me. And I learned a lot. And again, I was telling you, you know, I do those mobility drills, and that's helped me a lot. And I feel better. I just feel better. I feel like I can still move better. And, you know, and the tricky thing about it is, and you know, it's like until you can't move, yep. you don't know what you're missing.
Yep.
You know, and you're like, you know, I can't do that. You know, I can't do that technique. You know, that's when you have those moments like, that one's not for my game. I can't do that. But you know, I had a guy I trained with a lot in Israel. We were working on Kiss of the Dragon, and we were doing, you know, the crab roll, and you know, you've seen all those, but you know, where you like you have to invert. And I just told him, I was doing some private lessons, and I told this guy, I said, you know, that's, I'm not sure that's part of my game. And he said, well, let's try, you know. And so I worked on it, and he showed me, and you know, again, I worked some of the, you know, some of the finer details of those techniques. And I got to where I can't do all of them, but you know, I got where I'm more flexible than I think yep. I am. You know, like if you know how to invert, you can do it, you know, and like, you don't need a lot of athleticism. You can, you know, there's leverage and there's all kinds of things yep. that come with the technique. And, you know, again, those are all the things that to me, you know, great about jiu-jitsu, that like, you know, you're constantly learning and challenging yourself. And like, you know, you never have to, you know, you don't say like, hey, I can't do that technique. I'm just not right. that flexible. Because if you work on it,
yep.
you can do it. I could. I can't, like I said, I can't do all of them, but right. I can do a Kiss of the Dragon pretty yep. well. Like once you know, how to turn your body and get the angle and, you know, all that kind of stuff that you practice, you know, it's in that moment that you do it, you know, like you successfully do that, something that you couldn't do. Now it's got you hooked, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, talk about endorphins.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, it's. I think a lot of it, you know, is we. I had Alberto Crane on last week on the podcast, and you know, he's a jiu-jitsu guy, has a school. He's a, I think, fifth degree black belt. You know, very highly decorated jiu-jitsu guy, and then you know, fought MMA and has a gym out in California, Legacy Jiu-Jitsu and MMA, and is now is the. The CEO of TacFit, and it really did that because, you know, Scott Sonnen is still, he's still the founder and all that, but Alberto's kind of helping kind of reorganize and get the word out about TacFit. But the reason is because of all the changes it did for him, and it was the same thing we were talking about last week, is that, and one of the reasons I was excited to have him on is because he had a bunch of injuries and things, and I remember seeing him do push-ups, you know, on his knuckles because he couldn't put his hands flat on the floor. And here's a guy, you know, if you can't put your hands flat on the floor and you're doing jiu-jitsu at a high level, imagine, right? So, and then I saw him recently in a video, and man, he's like, moving incredible. And I said, like, that's awesome, because a lot of people get, you know, to a certain point, things hurt, and they're like, I can't do that, and they just quit trying. Whereas he had a different mindset, and now you can see the improvements in it. And even for myself, I mean, since I've, you know, been focused more on, like, the TacFit stuff over the last couple of years, you know, I can do some things that, you know, I remember when I went to the certification, we're talking about, like, some of the movements I couldn't even do. You know, I couldn't get right. myself in the, and, you know, I'm not a master of them by any chance, but at least I can do them now. So, like you said, I think sometimes it's just a mindset of, like, once you get that little inkling of, like, oh, if I just keep right. doing it and working on it, it will get better, versus right. just not trying to do it at all. And then you're going down a, you know, I think a not so, you know, healthy path. Right. You know,
right. if you, and it becomes tougher, you know, yep. like, as you get older, because I have kind of chronicled in my own journey, there are waypoints that I can remember. So, like, the first one I remember is, like, when I hit 30. Like, I was, before I was 30, I was about 155 pounds. I could eat anything and not gain a pound. I hit 30 and I put on 15 pounds like that. I was 165. And, you know, I hit one probably about 43, 44. Like, I just, you know, there's a noticeable dip in your metabolism. You just feel like, you know, and I think, you know, if you're careful and you're paying attention to it, you can kind of manage. Those are signs, you know, that, okay, you need to adjust. You know, like, I back in the day, I did a lot of heavy lifts, you know, did a lot of, you know, when I was in college, you know, I did do 2 hours in the gym, you know, do a little bit of everything and probably not, you know, not accomplish much. I was, you know, you remember back, you know, you would do, you know, you'd have, like, you know, the universal machine, or you would, you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to do squats, I'm going to do chest, I'm going to do tip, I'm going to do everything for 2 hours. You know, and then, you know, if you pay attention to that, you kind of go, okay, what do I really need to focus on?
Yep.
And, you know, again, you guys helped me a lot, you know, with the idea that, like, okay, what are you doing and what's the purpose? You know, like, are you trying to do functional fitness for jiu-jitsu? Do you just want to get stronger? Do you want to be a power lifter? You know, having that kind of, again, I wish, and I always, that's why I always try to point people in y'all's direction, like I did my son. You know, if you're at 20 and you have that knowledge, you know, to say, okay, what is it that you want to do? Is it just general fitness? Do you want to be good at jiu-jitsu? Or do you want to be a good, you know, rock climber or whatever? That will direct you and will help you, and you can kind of focus you. And
yep.
It took me a long time because, like I said, the Army just wants general purpose fitness people. And so that's what I learned how to do, and did not really teach me, like, how to manage, you know, how you rest. And so, and you know, then part of it, just the code was, you know, if you got to work harder, not smarter yep. sometimes. Yep. You know? And so I've had to kind of come back, you know, but life will force you to do that, yep. you know, and, yep. and I think that's what's tricky is, like, you know, if you don't do that, you're going to get injured. And I think I guess what I worry about is, you know, if I get a little bit out of balance and get injured, you know, where it's very frustrating for me. Like, I had a little garden variety cold virus 10 days ago, a week ago, and I had to go get COVID tested. You know, I was kind of nervous about that. But it was very frustrating for me not to work out. That's hard. You know, you don't feel good, and then you're frustrated because, like, I can't just move a little bit. You know, that's where I got that idea of, like, you're just kind of an engine that you kind of got to dial it back a little bit, you know, sometimes. But I wish I'd had a lot of that knowledge, you know, if I'd had some of that training earlier. It's like, I, you know, I look at Adam all the time, Adam Honeycutt, and I'm like, man, if I had started doing jiu-jitsu, even in my 30s, instead of I was 40 when I started.
Yeah.
If I'd been in my 30s, like, I could have been at such a higher level. I look at that guy, like, he was doing karate, you know, when he was a teenager, and then moved to jiu-jitsu. Like, and, you know, he's phenomenal.
Yep.
I mean, and Hoffa too, you know, like, you start when you're that age, you know, so you kind of, like, have those moments, you know, you're a little wistful, like, man, I wish I'd been a little bit younger when I started this.
Yep, yep.
But it's all good. It's a good, you know, it's a good journey, you know. But, yeah, I think the key thing too, though, Billy, is, like, you got to keep going. Like, to me, like, you know, you got to keep doing it, and you got to keep going. I've learned that, I think, you know, I believe that, you know, you stop moving, you die. And, like, your body is designed to move. And if you manage that, you know, you can, you know, my goal is, as somebody said, you know, you, you die, like you're completely worn out, you're exhausted, you've seen everything you want to see, and you're like, okay, your body's completely worn out, you know, like because you've maintained it, you know, you've done everything you want to do. You know, that's probably some goodness there.
Yep. Keep moving forward for sure. Well, right. Brian, I appreciate your time today. Awesome talking to you, and you know, I would love to do it again with you sometime. Like I said, we've got so many different things we could talk about. Great talking to you. Any last words you want to pass on before we close out this podcast?
Well, there's two things real quick, Billy. I talked a lot about jiu-jitsu, and you know, just for me, I have had, and you noticed this, you know, and you were talking about this earlier. You know, I have maintained this connection, and you know, one of the things that's been life-changing to me about jiu-jitsu is that I tell people this all the time too, is like I've just met the nicest people in the world. Like, and you know, and I know people have talked about this in the community. You know, a great thing about jiu-jitsu is like there are no egos and there are no liars on the mats. You know, like if you come in and say you're a black belt and you're not, everybody's going to know. And you know, I've walked on, you know, every time I walk on the mat at Alliance in Greenville, you know, I know that everybody there is better than me, is younger than me, but I also know that, you know, they're going to respect who I am, and you know that they're going to give me their honesty, you know, on the mats. And so, to me, what that's done is created like a circle of friends that I just would never have had, you know, if I hadn't had that. And you know, I've been gone. Actually, I left Greenville really, other than short visits. I've been gone, you know, since 2012, 2013. You know, I'll come back because of my family. But but Alliance Greenville is my family. You know, Hoffa, you know, there's not a whole lot that I wouldn't do for you guys. You know, and people like Adam and Russell, like the people have just really had a profound impact on me. And so it's a great community that you had there. And I just want to tell you that because it's been invaluable to me. And I will even tell you that, and I will shut up after this, but I will even tell you, and I meant to say tell you this at the beginning, you even got me, Billy, you're the first guy who got me hooked on a podcast, because you introduced me to Mark Devine's podcast. And it was funny because I saw your email and I thought about you. Like, that's the first podcast that I subscribed to, and I listened to that guy pretty religiously for almost 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I was trying to think, it's been almost 10 years.
Probably so, yeah.
I read his book. Yep. And, I mean, he's a great guy. Yep. And really interesting. But even that, you know, like I learned all these things, you know, from you guys and Twix and your gym. And even the podcast that we're here talking about, like you kind of got me hooked on. Because I remember we were over there in your gym and you said, you should check this guy out.
Yep.
You know, he's a former Navy SEAL. And I did, and like for a long time, I think it was the first podcast that I subscribed to, and I kind of drifted away a little bit because my podcasts now are out of control. But I check him out every once in a while, and yep. but you even got me started down that path.
Okay. Well, it's great. I mean, this is, you know, again, like you said, the connections. People you meet, you know, we feel the same way about you, and. You know, love when you get to come back and visit. I appreciate you actually reading some of my emails, because occasionally you'll send me a question or a comment, and like, oh, good, he still reads them.
I do. I absolutely do. Good stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, man, it's cool, and hopefully, like I said, we'll get Will in here training with us a little bit. That'll be fun, and. And we look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great, great rest of the day, and talk to you soon. Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Billy.